This is Sea Change Radio, covering the shift to sustainability. I'm Alex Wise.
If the state doesn't step in, or if the people of California don't push their government to step in and take ownership of this utility, it's only going to get much worse.
There's a quote often attributed, perhaps incorrectly, to the great economist John Maynard Keynes that capitalism is the extraordinary belief that the nastiest of men for the nastiest of motives will somehow work for the benefit of all. The absurdity of this notion is being played out in real time in the form of smoke-filled air and rolling blackouts in Northern California, courtesy of the state's largest monopoly, Pacific Gas and Electric, better known as PG&E. This week on Sea Change Radio, journalist Ben Ehrenreich joins the show to discuss his piece in The Nation on PG&E and the utility company's most recent episode of Malfeasance. Ehrenreich provides an overview of PG&E putting profits before people, looks at some possible solutions to the problem, and reminds us that capitalism's nastiness is often at odds with a healthy planet. I'm joined now on Sea Change Radio by journalist Ben Ehrenreich. Ben, welcome to Sea Change Radio.
Thank you, Alex.
So you have a piece in The Nation about the California fires, the annual California fires. It's entitled, California is Burning, Nationalize PG&E. It caught my eye because I had not really thought of that option for PG&E. You write that this counts as normal now, just another smoky autumn in the Anthropocene. Mix hot, dry winds with abundant, crisp, parched brush, add capitalism, and watch a whole state burn. So what does the add capitalism part mean here? Why don't you break down where PG&E has gone wrong and where you think this should be headed?
First, why don't you tell our listeners around the country what PG&E is?
Sure. PG&E is Pacific Gas and Electric. It's the largest investor-owned utility in the United States. It's also the largest in California, of course. And it provides power to a large portion of California residents, certainly most of Northern and Central California.
What does that mean, investor-owned utility?
Investor-owned means it's a private corporation. It's owned by its investors. It's owned by its stockholders.
But it has a monopoly.
Yeah, in the areas that it serves, although serve is a bit of a strange word to use in this context. It has a monopoly. You don't have a choice if you live in an area that's served by PG&E about how to get your power. You pay the bills to them, or you go without power. And its investors may live anywhere in the world. And many of them, may be hedge funds that don't even, the investors are not people that care particularly whether you have your power or know that you exist, or care if there's a fire burning outside your house, or know anything about you. They're people who want to see their stock prices go up and who want to see dividends appearing in their balance sheets. That's what investor-owned utility means. And most people in the United States also receive their power from other investor-owned utilities. In large parts of the country, they don't. I lived in L.A. for nearly 20 years, and L.A., like Sacramento, like some other parts of California, has a municipally-owned utility, the Los Angeles Department of Water and Power. There's large parts of the Midwest which have, I think most of Kentucky is entirely, public utilities. So it's not what everybody deals with, but it's what a lot of people deal with.
That's interesting. So one of the more red states, Kentucky, has a publicly owned utility. How is that working out? Is it, are cats sleeping with dogs there? What is it? Socialism got run amok in Mitch McConnell's nightmare?
I can't pretend that I know a great deal about it. About the situation in Kentucky. My general understanding, from living in LA, which has had a public utility, and from what I do know about other places that have public utilities, is they are They tend to be cheaper and more reliable than investor-owned utilities, but that doesn't mean that they are some utopian solution. You know, I think I quoted the figure in the piece in The Nation that the Sacramento's municipal utility pays on average 35% less than PG&E customers do. You know, living in LA, I was always amazed that we were sort of immune to a lot of the vicissitudes that the rest of the state was subject to. So during the Enron scandal, you know, some listeners may remember, you know, large parts of California were dealing with brownouts and blackouts. And in LA, it just didn't touch us. You know, our rates didn't go up. We didn't lose power. We had a public utility that, even if it's not particularly accountable to the people of Los Angeles, was run far more efficiently than any of these private entities. So, you know, I think making utilities public is not the end of the game, because you still have to make them accountable to the people that they serve. And that may mean breaking them up into much, much smaller systems. So I think my editor, not I, wrote the headline, "Nationalize PG&E." And I think we actually need we need utilities that are responsible to their communities, and that are controlled and owned by the communities that they serve. So I think national solutions may actually be the opposite of what we need in these cases.
Oh, okay. Well, that's an important correction. Well, let's look at the solutions later on. But for our listeners who don't live in the Bay Area like myself and haven't been following the Northern California and Southern California wildfires this season, where has PG&E gone wrong, according to most critics?
Well, I think it starts way before this wildfire season. You know, I think one of the decisions PG&E has been making consistently for, at this point, you know, 30 years or so, has been to not spend money on maintaining its infrastructure, not spend money on maintaining its power lines. In other cases, in some of its natural gas infrastructure, this has meant repeated pipeline explosions. People may remember one that leveled 38 homes in San Bruno in 2010 and killed 8 people. Just suddenly, an entire residential neighborhood blows up because PG&E decided to cut corners on maintenance for its pipelines. They've been doing something similar with their power lines, which is not trimming the trees alongside the power lines. You know, by California law, I think they have to be trimmed. There should be no branches within 10 feet of either side. You know, trees grow, so this is a large undertaking for an utility as large as PG&E. And I think they've clearly decided again and again over the years that they would rather pay fines, they would rather pay out lawsuits than invest the money in taking care of their own infrastructure. You know, I found cases, criminal cases, going back to 1990, in which PG&E was failing to trim the trees around its power lines and, you know, causing fires. In between 1994 and 98, state regulators charged PG&E with 500,000 instances of failing to trim their trees.
500,000. And those are the ones that were cited.
Yeah, more than 500,000.
That's pretty breathtaking number, yeah, if you
and,
think about it.
You know, I mean, this also, you know, certainly clearly points a finger at state regulators who, you know, if this keeps happening and you know, with such like wild negligence, and no one's taking responsibility for it, then obviously the state is at fault as well. But PG&E, they would pay out fines, they'd get sued, they'd pay the settlements, and I think that was worth it for them. And it allowed them at the same time to keep paying out dividends, to keep paying out executive bonuses, and doing what as a corporation it was, you know, it was meant to do, which was make a profit for its shareholders.
Until January of this year, when the lawsuits had mounted to such a level that the company declared bankruptcy, right?
Yeah, and I mean, I think what happened was, and that was mainly over the expected settlements coming out of the Camp Fire, you know, which is the largest fire in state history, which killed more than 80 people. And I think a model, you know, completely you know, morally bankrupt model, but nonetheless a model that allowed PG&E to maintain profits for several decades, and that worked for them, if not for the people whose homes were burned.
And this was just a year ago.
That was a year ago. That model stopped working, I think, really in the last 5 years or so, when the effects of the climate crisis have started to be felt more acutely in California. You know, we always had wildfires in California. There was always a fire season, but that season has gotten, you know, it's extended, and the fires have gotten far more severe as our summers have gotten hotter, as our droughts have gotten deeper. And, you know, scientists told us this would happen, and it's now very evidently happening. And this model that PG&E had, which, you know, was not a good one, became one that was absolutely catastrophic. So suddenly, like, all of the, you know, they are now, you know, thousands and thousands of miles behind in maintaining their own lines. So then in October, when we first started getting really severe fire weather, PG&E's only solution, because they had been so negligent for so long, their only solution was to turn off the power for 2 million people and hope that that would prevent another fire. And it turned out it didn't do it, because the Kincade fire, it now looks like, was probably started nonetheless by a PG&E tower where one of the wires snapped and started the fire. And that was one of the major transmission lines that they couldn't turn off, because it would have been turning off, you know, the power for the whole state. And that fire, the Kincade fire, you know, is still burning, burned more than 80,000 acres, and resulted in, you know, more than 200,000 people having to evacuate their homes. So, you know, these very short-sighted, profit-driven decisions have, you know, agglomerated over the years and led us into this absolutely catastrophic situation. And I, you know, I think this is true. What we see happening with PG&E is a kind of, in a, at the sort of microscopic level, is what's happened with climate change generally. Is we've seen, you know, private corporations making decisions all around the world, you know, for many decades now, that have led us to the situation of really planetary catastrophe. And so I think what I'm suggesting in this piece is that we need to take these public resources out of the hands of a private company and take them over and make them accountable to communities. I think this is true on a global level. That, you know, that human beings need to band together in order to survive, and make sure that we're not, you know, as a species, being sold out to corporate interests.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio. I'm speaking to journalist Ben Ehrenreich. His latest piece in The Nation magazine is entitled "California is Burning, Nationalize PG&E," although he doesn't necessarily want to nationalize PG&E. So looking at some of the solutions that PG&E has come up with for safety's sake, their first reaction was, well, let's cut power. It sounds on its face like a prudent thing to do, but it, in some ways it may be just as dangerous, isn't it?
Yeah, you know, I mean, if you have, you know, elderly relatives and want to think about them, you know, trying to get around without any electricity, you know, then you know this is a very dangerous thing.
during evacuations, to not have electricities and communication, that can be deadly, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, even in the first wave of blackouts, when they shut off the power earlier in October, before the fires had started, that was already, you know, people need electricity for medical devices to stay alive. And PG&E, of course, handled this, you know, absolutely abysmally. Their website didn't make clear where the blackouts were going to be happening. People didn't know if it was going to affect them or not. Of course, once the blackout starts, people can't, you know, get online because their Wi-Fi goes down. And then once the fire started, it's absolutely disastrous because cell phone towers go out. Not all cell phone towers have backup power. And in many cases, people's landlines went out too. So people can't even figure out if they're supposed to evacuate or not. Emergency services can't contact people to make sure they've evacuated. In some cases, emergency providers can't communicate with each other because their cell phones are out. This was an absurdly bad move, and it happened because PG&E had been, they sort of presented this as this prudent thing they were doing, but they were doing this only because they had been so reckless with people's safety for decades, and then were forced to be even more reckless in a moment when no one could afford that.
I've spoken to friends who believe it's a little more craven as well, and that it's kind of a messaging coming from PG&E saying, now you see how much you actually need us. You may not like how the sausage is made, but wait until you get no sausage. Like, all of a sudden we're going to cut off the power, and now you see how important we are to your daily lives.
And you know, the thing that I hope people are starting to realize is that Californians certainly don't need them. You know, most of California gets enough sun that there's no reason in the world that we should have these highly centralized utilities that control power for everybody. San Francisco, I think, gets something like 260 days of sun a year. You know, large parts of the Central Valley and of Southern California get far more sun than that. With decentralized solar, there's no reason that people should have to depend on having power shipped through the grid from, you know, dozens and hundreds of miles away by a giant utility that doesn't care if they live or die. People should be able to communities should be able to take these matters into their own hands.
And what we always hear from these bigger corporations is, well, a benevolent corporation has the buying power to be able to create a seismic shift, if you will, in terms of the grid. PG&E has the buying power, the scalability to be able to install mass solar to such a degree that it would transform the grid to a much greener tomorrow for California. But you're not buying that, are you?
I'm not buying that. No, and I think one of the things that's so extraordinary about this is, you know, we've all had this line shoved down our throats for decades that nothing is more efficient than private enterprise. That we can't have the government, you know, taking over things. We can't have public control of utilities or healthcare or anything else, because the only way to get, you know, efficiency is through the miracles of the market and of private enterprise. And you know, this is certainly true of healthcare as well, but you know, PG&E makes it extremely clear, like, it would be really hard to mess this up worse than they've messed it up. And they have messed it up by very consistently going after a profit motive. So going after precisely the motive that is supposed to mysteriously transform into, you know, efficiency and rationality and benefits and for all of us, they have instead, you know, resulted in unending catastrophe, and, you know, dozens if not hundreds of deaths, many, many hundreds of people rendered homeless, you know, huge swathes of the state burned to ashes. And we are still supposed to accept that private enterprise does it better. And, you know, in any parts of the state where there where utilities are in public control, and living in LA, like there's not a whole lot of people in Los Angeles who love the Department of Water and Power, but we don't have these problems. And you know, any parts of the state that have municipal utilities have not dealt with anything near the kinds of inefficiencies or price gouging that the customers of PG&E or of Southern California Edison have had to deal with.
And when you look at the motives for hiding these miscues, shall we generously label them, along the way, you can see that the investor-based model kind of lends itself to less transparency. I mean, anybody who watched Aaron Brockovich, this was PG&E that suffered a large class action lawsuit, and that was because they were dumping hundreds of millions of gallons of carcinogens into the water in Hinckley, California. And then the gas explosions in San Bruno. This is not just business as usual. This is not happening all over the country.
Yeah, and you know, all throughout this, PG&E, they've made it work on their own terms. You know, they handed out to their shareholders $4.5 billion in dividends, you know, all while, and at least some large part of that, they were able to hoard by not doing, you know, any maintenance on their own infrastructure. They're now in bankruptcy proceedings, and they had to pull back because a judge was furious when it came out that they planned to hand out $16 million in bonuses to their executives this year, this very year. And you know, so that's how this, you know, for-profit model works, is that they bleed the system entirely to hand over profits to investors and to executives.
And what about politicians? Because that's one of the big problems we've seen in, let's say, Florida, where the public utilities there have kind of bought and paid for the state assemblies in a state that had the second or third highest sun profile in the country. It was illegal to lease solar panels because the utilities there bribed the state legislators.
Yeah, and you know, PG&E has always been quite cozy with California legislators. You know, there's been more and more momentum in California to allow municipalities to take control of their own power, which led in 2010 PG&E to basically wholly sponsor a ballot initiative, which they spent $46 million on, to prevent municipalities from taking control of their own power, and it failed. But PG&E is clearly sort of has been doing everything it can over the years to preserve precisely the corrupt system that they've created. And you know, I think that while all of this has always been disastrous. I mean, the pipeline explosions, the contamination of the water in Hinckley, like all of this has been homicidally disastrous for years. But with the climate crisis, it's beyond disastrous. And I think it's clearer than ever that we simply, you know, we cannot afford to let our lives be left in the hands of people who don't care about us and who are completely willing to, you know, let hundreds or thousands of people die if their bottom lines can be preserved.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio, and I'm speaking to Ben Ehrenreich. He's a journalist and has written a piece called California is Burning for The Nation magazine. So, Ben, let's look at how this may unfold. California does have a problem on its hands with PG&E. I think we agree. But it also has some pretty progressive leadership from the top down. Gavin Newsom is not pleased with the status quo. And then there are prominent politicians like Congressman Ro Khanna and San Jose Mayor Sam Liccardo, who've both come out for customer ownership of PG&E. How do you think this realistically may play out?
You know, it's hard to predict. I'm actually less impressed with Gavin Newsom. You know, the governor last weekend put out a call, actually the weekend before this one, asking Warren Buffett, the billionaire entrepreneur.
Yeah, I saw that. He wants Berkshire Hathaway to buy PG&E. How would that solve a problem?
That would not solve. I mean, Berkshire Hathaway, you know, is heavily invested in fossil fuels and coal, and heavily invested in shale oil in the Permian Basin in Texas and New Mexico. You know, Berkshire Hathaway is making billions of dollars by, you know, expanding fossil fuel extraction, which is, you know, pushing the climate crisis to further and further catastrophes. And, you know, Warren Buffett faced a small shareholder rebellion, I think this was about a year ago, of shareholders who didn't want him to be so heavily invested in fossil fuels. And he fought that down and said, we have to separate our moral concerns from our, you know, financial concerns. So basically the bottom line is what matters. And if it kills, you know, hundreds or thousands or millions of people, that's another issue that he didn't want to think about. So I think it's absolute foolishness to think that Berkshire Hathaway is going to come in here and solve this, or that any private entity is going to come in here and solve this. You know, at the moment, what's happening is it's being fought out in a bankruptcy court, and there are different, you know, sort of gangs of hedge funds who are fighting for control of PG&E. And, you know, I think if the state doesn't step in, or if the people of California don't push their government to step in and take ownership of this utility, it's only going to get much worse. Because, you know, the hedge funds that are pushing to control PG&E, they're not doing it because, like, it's nice to own a utility and they can be proud of it. They're doing it because they want to make money.
Yeah, Warren Buffett may be a Democrat, but he's still a capitalist. And the problem isn't Republicans or Democrats. It's capitalism in certain arenas, isn't it?
Absolutely. And you know, Gavin Newsom may be right that Warren Buffett would be a lesser evil than some of these hedge funds that are fighting for control of PG&E. You know, these are funds that buy up distressed assets. PG&E is now a distressed asset. They can buy all of this on the cheap. And these are, you know, these are people who
lay people off and maximize profits is usually the formula, though, isn't it? And that's not what this requires. This needs more infrastructure, more investment, more diligence, not less.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, I think if this is left to the system as usual, that means leaving the state of California to the vultures. That's what it means. And things will only get infinitely worse.
Ben Ehrenreich, thanks so much for being my guest on Sea Change Radio.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
Sway the future to the past and find what will endure.
You've been listening to Sea Change Radio. Our intro music is by Sanford Lewis, and our outro music is by Alex Wise. Additional music by Eddie Harris, Iron and Wine, and Sting. Check out our website at seachangeradio.com. That's seachangeradio.com to stream or download the show or subscribe to our podcast. Visit our archives there to hear from Bill McKibben, Van Jones, Paul Hawken, and many others. And tune in to Sea Change Radio next week as we continue making connections for sustainability. For Sea Change Radio, I'm Alex Wise.